briefing with Ms. Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967. The Special Rapporteur, who is an independent expert for the United Nations, is briefing us online from South Africa after presenting her latest report to the UN General Assembly's Third Committee. The annual Third Committee addresses issues of social development as well as human rights. We will begin with a few remarks from the expert and then open up for questions. Ms. Albanese, you have the floor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning or good afternoon to everyone who's in New York, and good evening to those who are in Cape Town. I have to say that I'm glad, honored, and humbled to be in South Africa, although I deeply regret not being able, as a UN Special Rapporteur, protected under the UN Charter and under the UN Conventions on Privileges and Immunities, to present my report in person in New York in the UN headquarters due to the unlawful sanctions that have been imposed on me simply for fulfilling my UN mandate. But I'm here to discuss and present to you, to the media, my last report, Gaza Genocide. I claim through this report that Israel's genocide in Gaza is part of an international system of complicity. And international law is very clear. States must neither aid nor assist in internationally wrongful acts of others. Instead, they might prevent, stop, and punish international crimes. These obligations, king of legal obligations, in the breach of peremptory norms of international law, not acts of charity, but they require immediate suspension of military, economic, and diplomatic ties with Israel until its crimes cease, and pursuing justice for the survivors by holding perpetrators and their accomplices accountable. Instead, my report exposes how influential third states, with the acquiescence of many others, have provided diplomatic, military, economic, and ideological support to Israel, entrenching rather than dismantling Israel's settler colonial apartheid, which in the past 2 years has turned genocidal. I think that no state can credibly claim to uphold international law while arming, supporting, and shielding a genocidal regime. Third states, by doing so, are breaching their duty to prevent genocide, apartheid, and all the more, territorial conquest by supplying Israel with aid, arms, and political cover, despite the mounting evidence of genocidal intent. The International Court of Justice has spoken 3 times on the risk of genocide in January, March, and May 2024. This has triggered the obligation to prevent acts of genocide, to punish incitement, to stop genocide, and to punish acts of genocide. And instead, states continue to obscure, ignore, and even profit from Israel's violations of international law. Military cooperation is probably the most significant of the forms of complicity, because through arms trade and intelligence sharing, some states more than others have fueled Israel's war machine. The United States and Germany alone have provided 90% of Israel's arms imports, but at least 26 states, with Italy, my own country, first, being listed for having supplied or facilitated arms component transferred to Israel, while many others keep on buying weapons that have been tested on the Palestinians. Trade and investment have sustained and profited from Israel's economy. The United States in particular, exports of electronics pharmaceutical, energy minerals, and dual use item total $474 billion. All these has helped Israel finance its military operations. And while the United Nations, while the European Union has been so quick in imposing sanctions against Russia for the Ukraine invasion, it continues, as we speak, to be the prime trade partner for Israel, while North America and several Arab states continue deepening economic ties with Israel. Only a few states have marginally reduced trade during the genocide, but indirect commercial flows persist. I have to say that one of the most sadistic aspects of this genocide is the weaponization of aid. What began with the unlawful blockade and with the attacks on UNRWA has become a full subjugation of aid to Israel and United States diktat, stripping the UN of its protective role. And these measures that member states have aided or endorsed, of course, have worsened the living conditions in Gaza. The problem, unfortunately, is deeply ideological, because Western leaders have echoed Israel's propaganda, repeating the self-defense mantra, reviving colonial tropes to cast the Palestinians as less than human, as terrorists by default. And by framing Gaza's destruction as a battle of civilization against barbarism, they've helped Israel erase the distinction between civilians and combatants. As I conclude these initial remarks, I want to stress, especially speaking from the roots of Mother Africa, that I'm surprised by how little too many states in the global majority, otherwise known as Global South, include across the African continent once liberated from the colonial oppression, have done to confront this genocide. Only 14 states have joined that important decision of South Africa to launch its landmark case for genocide against Israel before the ICJ. And look, this is not just about Palestine. It is about the survival of the United Nations according to its core values and norms. From the ruins of oppression, we must forge a new multilateralism that is not for the few, but for the many, premised upon human dignity and equal rights and justice. Thank you.
Much, Ms. Albanese, and we'll go to the room for questions. Please go ahead. Yes.
Thank you very much for this press conference. This is Stefano Vaccara, Ital Press, La Voce di New York. During your presentation, not to us, to the member states, there were very harsh response from the Israeli ambassador, but also from Italy, from your country. So my question is, what message do you have for your government, for your people, about what happened to you? And also another question that is very important today, we was discussed also here in this room. Do you think the Secretary General did everything in his power to defend you, or he should have done more?
I've heard from the General Assembly a lot of support and endorsement for my findings, including by member states who are named in the report. This includes Arab states, and this includes states like South Africa or Colombia. So, and there are member states who are named and exposed in the report that didn't take the floor, so I take it as a positive note. While there was a crowd of member states who never show up during my interactive dialogues, and one is Italy, Hungary, Romania, who came to endorse Israel's words. And, you know, I take criticism quite positively. So as I said to Hungary and Italy, it's fine. You accuse me of making political statements. Make an example so I can change this. Because what I'm telling you is to answer the findings of my report, the fact that you are supporting diplomatically, politically, militarily, an economic state which stands today before two international courts for war crimes and crimes against humanity, and this risk to make you and your government officials complicit for genocide, and there will be national courts and possibly the ICC judging you. So it seems to me that all this fanfare is rather to distract the attention from the findings. And, you know, after 3 years of being exposed to this, I almost don't feel anymore the personal attacks because they are far away. What I hear more loudly is the cry for end of the brutality and the genocide from Gaza, end of an ethnic cleansing from the West Bank, and the cry of the people who are tired and disgusted by the ongoing genocide, including in my own country. The government is to respond to the hundreds of thousands and of people who are taking the streets, to the workers who are striking, to the people who, and especially the young generation for whom this genocide is memory in the making. They have to respond about why they continue to provide and to supply Israel with weapons, not to me, to them. I mean, here I stand as a UN special rapporteur, so it doesn't matter if it's my government or another who criticizes me. They have to respond to the allegations that are made in the report. Full stop.
What about the Secretary General? Do you think he?
I have no comment. No comment.
Please go ahead.
Hi, Evelyn Leopold. It's good to see you. Where are you broadcasting from? Tunisia or what?
No, I am in South Africa.
You're in South Africa.
In Cape Town.
Oh, yeah.
I am in the Desmond and Eleha Tutu's Foundation. How symbolic and powerful.
That's right. I should have recognized the face in back of you, whom I met once, strangely enough. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think October 7th was a game changer?
Excuse me?
Do you think that what happened on October 7th, was that a game changer?
Oh, I think that what happened on October 7th is to be told to the Israelis and the world for what it was. I think that none of us has had the time to absorb exactly what happened because there were military bases attacked. And whatever was an attack not conducted against Israeli soldiers and military bases and targeted Israeli civilians was criminal. Crimes were committed against Israeli civilians, but by Palestinian armed groups, but as mounting evidence demonstrates, also by the Israeli army. So there is the condition of inquiry, which has investigated on this to the best of its capacity and provided a report already 1 year and a half ago. What I think has been a game changer is the genocidal intent that has transformed a settler colonial apartheid regime into a genocide. And this started on October 9, where the intent to cut ties, food, water, medicine and fuel to the Palestinians as human animals, as a nation responsible, as the Amalek, the natural enemy of the Israelis, was enforced. And so for me, the 9th of October 2023 was a game changer.
Thank you. Thank you, Farnoosh Shamiri with the Associated Press. Thank you for doing this. I have two questions. Can you talk about, were there travel restrictions on you when you tried to get your paperwork to come to New York. I think it's been a little confusing to know if the sanctions included travel restrictions on you being able to come to the U.S. And then my second question is, do you worry, I know that this is your last report and several other commissioners who serve with you are also leaving their work. Do you worry that what has happened to you and what has happened to other folks that you have been working with on this issue for the past several years, given the personal attacks, I'm sure there have been threats to your physical safety, that people in the future will not want to cover or stand up to become UN experts on a topic like this?
Yeah, just a clarification, because I sense that there is a confusion. Today, the Commission of Inquiry, Navi Pillay's commission, presented its last report. My mandate continues for another 2.5 years. So unless anything major happens, I should be around until 2028. So, but to answer your question, I've been the first UN expert, but again, UN persona to receive sanctions by any state, in all the more in my case, but one of the most powerful states in the international community, which, as I said today to member states, is an affront to the United Nations itself, its principles, its soul, its very soul. And I'm surprised that since July, no concrete steps other than declarations and condemnations, which frankly I appreciate very much, but do not resolve the problem. So the sanctions have not been lifted, and they are utterly impairing financially, practically. The hurdles on me are numerous, but again, I prefer discussing this with member states and not with the media, because I don't want to occupy this space to distract the attention from the content of my mandate, which is the genocide in Palestine, which is spotting light on the genocide in Palestine. As per the travel restrictions, I mean, the travel ban is the first consequence of the sanctions, that again are unlawful, are against the UN Charter, are against the UN Convention on Privileges and Immunities. And you know, as a UN expert, I work pro bono with a lot of sacrifice and a lot of discipline, because I'm constantly under scrutiny. So I pay extra care and attention to make sure that the findings, the facts reported in my report are solid, are corroborated, are verified. All member states have been, over 60 states have been provided my report 1 week in advance to provide comments. Yes, I understand states have complained that they were not provided enough time. I would like to have them in during one day of my life, having to deal with the sanctions and the ongoing genocides and all the rest. So they should do their job while I do mine diligently. But I do that operators of trust. I trust the United Nations, and I expect that they uphold the Convention on Privileges and Immunities. There is a travel ban, as I said, and there are financial penalties imposed on me and anyone who has any economic dealing with me, including my own family. I've applied to come to the United States, and frankly, there is not much to say other than it was cumbersome, and eventually time was such where I said that it's, frankly, I'm not there to fight with the United States over my appearance in New York. I was happy to be in South Africa among people who deserve my presence.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Francesca. Abdelhamid Sayam from the Arabic Daily Al-Quds Al-Arabi. I have two questions and maybe follow up, but the first question is about the ICC. You know that ICC follows the crimes committed by individuals, not by states only. The ICC issued two arrest warrants for two individuals, the prime minister and the defense minister, The first time it was mentioned May 20th, but it was issued on November, I think, 21st. Mm-hmm. From those days, from May 20th, when the first time mentioned the Prime Minister and the Defense Minister, until now, no other individual was implicated, although crimes are committed. Crimes against humanity, war crimes, genocide, destruction of hospitals, destruction of clinics, destruction of food storages, all these crimes, and yet ICC did not issue one single arrest warrant following those two individuals. What do you think of that? Why the ICC is not doing its proper job? And my second question is about the background of October 7. I mean, the Israelis and their proxies want the history to start on October 7. Nothing before it and nothing after it. They don't want people to see the people killed in Gaza or what's going on in the West Bank. Only October 7. October 7 is like, remember, September 11, same. Now, the Palestinian people have been, as you know, going through genocide, not on October 9, but from 1948. Mm-hmm. So how come many of the UN officials that don't connect the dots of what happened to the Palestinians, uprooted from their homes, thrown, became refugees, and wars and wars and wars, 1956, 1967, 1973, 1982. In Gaza was subject to 5 wars. Why is that? Mm-mm. They don't put the dots. They don't connect what happened before October 7. Thank you.
Look, it's true, the ICC has issued only 2 arrest warrants, and the question I would ask is why he had to wait until fall 2024 to do that, since settler colonialism was ongoing, and so the aggression against the Palestinian people were crimes, forced displacement, the large use of torture against Palestinian unlawfully detained. I would move the attention to something else, which is not merely circumstantial and that has happened over the past months. The ICC has been under unprecedented pressure for the other by the United States, which I remind you, entirety, state, have violated their obligation to cooperate with the court and to arrest the persons under arrest warrant by allowing, for example, ICC wanted Prime Minister of Israel Benjamin Netanyahu to use their airspace. Again, Hungary has stepped out of the Rome Statute and has said that they will not arrest and so has Poland. So the and it took National Criminal Court, that it's being dismantled brick by of a combination of reasons that I believe bring reality that allows certain legitimate criticism against the ICC. But international law, including international criminal law, is enforceable only, and is enforced only through member states. It's not that the ICC has its own police. So the ICC is frankly strangled. I would like to know if in 5 years' time or 10 years' time, things progress this way, the ICC will still be there. This is, I mean, We are not talking of a dystopic future. We are in a dystopic moment where member states, influential member states, clearly do not play by the rules and say openly that they don't need the international system anymore. They can conduct themselves according to the principle might make right. And there is only one force that can stop this abhorrent dystopic present, and it's us. As ordinary citizens in the United States, in Europe, in this continent, which has become more and more silent vis-a-vis the crimes committed against the Palestinians. And for me, Palestine is a test. So again, I think that the problem is not with the individuals or in the ICC or the institution per se. It's systematic and widespread. On the second question, I agree with you that history didn't start. Violence in Palestine or Israel-Palestine didn't start on October 7th. Of course not. I mean, I've written 7 reports on that, so I don't need to be convinced. You ask me why UN officials do not take a stronger position. Well, you are in New York. Why don't you ask them? I cannot reply on their behalf.
Honestly, I did ask them many times, including the Secretary General, who mentioned it once and never repeated it again because they asked him to resign and they attacked him severely, the way they attack you now. And since then, he never repeated that October 7 did not come from a vacuum.
We've got about 15 minutes left of the Special Rapporteur's time, so if we can keep it to one question and then we've got to go online. Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Good to see you, Ms. Albanese. Thank you so much for this briefing. Ephraim Kosaifi from Arab News Daily. You mentioned that this is all about the survival also of the UN according to its norms and values. Can you elaborate, please, on that? What are your concerns regarding the future of this organization? And given the fact that most countries you mention in your report, especially Western countries, are actually countries that pride themselves on upholding international law and human rights law and all the conventions, where does that leave international law these days from a lawyer's perspective as well? Thank you.
Well, I think that what you say that member states take pride in championing international law? No, they don't do that anymore. They don't need. And the hypocrisy of many is so exposed that I understand why they don't pretend to champion international law anymore. In certain contests, they do. They do invoke international law against Russia to end the war in Ukraine, and I think this is right, but it's the double standards are so stark that are pathetic. But also I think of the other people who are dying while the most of the international community looks away. Think of Sudan, think of Congo. There are 50 wars ongoing and there is no attention to this, really no attention and no care, just sporadic, superficial and inconsequential words of condemnation. So I think that this moment is, as I've often said, apocalyptic in the sense that it's showing the apocalyptic destruction in Gaza, but also it's revealing who we are as individuals, as communities, as states, as organizations. The United Nations was set up to protect peace and stability, to prevent conflicts. And for a long time, it has managed to avoid at least a nuclear war. But in Gaza, it has failed miserably. It has failed to enforce international law, which for me as a lawyer is the most serious responsibility. I've said it since October 10, 2023, Israel cannot claim self-defense. Israel cannot invoke self-defense. Article 51 of the UN Charter does not apply in a context of permanent occupation. It applies only in situation of conflicts among states. If Israel or its acolytes are convinced that a Hamas without an army, without or a Palestinian armed group, without an army, without tanks, without F-35 or whatever, constitutes a threat to Israel's security to justify the use of force. Well, they have to go to the International Court of Justice and seek for another advisory opinion, because so far the law prevents Israel from invoking the law of self-defense while, as the ICJ says, illegally occupying a territory that is not his own. So Israel needs to withdraw the troops, dismantle the colonies, and stop exploiting Palestinian resources and practicing apartheid against and racial segregation against the Palestinians. So this function has failed, the function of channeling and hosting advancing discussion to stop the brutality, to stop the violation of international humanitarian law, has failed. What I, as I said before in my opening remarks, what I find most depressing is what has happened to the humanitarian function of the United Nations. It has failed. And the United Nations as a whole, despite words here and there, the United Nations have allowed the dismantlement, the almost nearly complete dismantlement of the humanitarian function of the United Nations in Gaza through the huge blow that has been suffered by UNRWA. The fact the member states, because eventually the United Nations is an organization, it's an international intergovernmental organization, it exists as a coalition, as a family of all states. And these all states have not been altogether being able to contain and isolate the two states that are creating a threat to peace and security in the Arab region and beyond, which are Israel and the United States. And again, this continues. I mean, it's since October 11, member states keep on celebrating peace, the end of hostilities. But the mediocrity and the hypocrisy of this debate leaves me speechless. I don't know what to say. Nearly 100 Palestinians have been killed. Nearly 350 of them have been injured. They continue to be starved. Aid doesn't enter. The hostages, thankfully, have been released and have been allowed to return to the safety of their homes, while the Palestinians have not. The bodies of the withheld Palestinians have returned desecrated and with the signs of torture, which speaks to the hubris of Israel that it really has no shame. The Palestinian prisoners or the Palestinian hostages who have been released recount of the torture they have suffered. There are 10,000 Palestinians still held in jail, and nothing changes. So I think this is, I mean, what does it say to the young generation? Because my generation grew with this ideal or this idealism toward the United Nations, which are so miserably fail to uphold the UN Charter. And what does it tell about international law? No, I think that international law has a different story, because international law is a system of norms that are there to allow us, to allow me to distinguish between the wrong and the right. And today, the international law is spoken by the masses against genocide, against apartheid, against Israel's crimes. Probably member states and states, diplomats and civil servants have not realized yet, but we are living a phase of acceleration, and we are already into the future where the United Nations is becoming, and I'm sorry to say that, because of course I would like to see the United Nations rise and straighten its back and its head and stand solid and principled into the future. But the United Nations is becoming more and more irrelevant, I'm afraid.
One question from the back.
Thank you very much. Paolo Mastrolilli with the Italian Daily La Repubblica. I would like to go back to what you said about Italy in the report. What should Italy do in order to comply with your report? Stop selling weapons, stop trading with Israel. What are the concrete steps that you would expect from Italy?
One positive thing would be for the Italian government to read my reports and to engage with the content of my reports and the findings instead of spreading spurious allegations that only distract from the core of the matter. Italy is showing a level of political immaturity that I've not registered in any other country I have had the privilege or the chance to engage with. And the appearance of the Italian ambassador, for once, is taking the floor, will go down in history as ludicrous. Because again, it didn't touch on any of the findings they had brought to the fore. He could have come and say, no, what you say about Italy is not true because of this and that. And he didn't. He just accused me of making political statements. And this is, again, this shows a lack of political maturity that is not of the country I grew up in, which has had in the past a respectable diplomatic tradition. Concerning what what Italy should be doing, respecting international law, stop defending Israel as if it was officer in charge, cutting trade, cutting economic relations, doing what the dockers and the people striking in Italy are asking, that Italian ports are no longer transit for Israeli goods entering European market through Italy, or for weapons and weapon components transiting from through Italian ports from many European countries toward Israel. And by doing so, Italy is in one go violating its law. It has a law, la legge 185, which prohibits what Italy is doing, because Italy should at the port should control cargoes toward countries which are outside the European Union, and it doesn't do so. So it violates its own laws. It violates its constitution, which imposes not to engage in wars, and it violates its international commitments, including to prevent genocide. It's not an opinion, let alone what I'm saying with the Commission of Inquiry, the UN Special Committee on Israeli Practices, genocide scholars and genocide organizations, and not about what we say. It's the International Court of Justice. The moment in January 2024, the court recognized a risk of genocide, this triggered the obligation for Italy and all other countries concerned to cut trade, especially armed trades to Israel. And as long as Italy doesn't do that, it violates international law. And because it might find itself complicit in the crimes that Israel is committing. And for that, the Israeli government has been sued by an organization consisting of Italian lawyers who have filed the case at the ICC. So it's very serious.
Last question in the room, then online. Thanks.
Thank you for your press conference. My name is Yu from Kyodo News, Japanese news agency. I have a follow-up question about the sanction to you by United States to make sure the details. So after the sanction, have you ever talked with United States about the sanction? And then one more. So did you get any advice or comment from Secretary General about the sanction? Thank you.
No engagement with the United States, and on the support received so far by the United Nations, I prefer not to comment.
Going online to Ibtisam.
Hi, thank you. My name is Ibtisam Azim, Al Arab Al Jadid newspaper. Good to see you, and thanks for the briefing. I have two questions. One follows up on your previous answer regarding Italy, or better, or my question is when it comes to the role of third countries, and you talked about it in length and also in your report, but I'm wondering, why do you think third countries ignoring international law, ignoring their own laws, and risking actually being held illegally accountable. And the second question is about the media and manufacturing consent. And you touched on the role of the media, but if you could elaborate on that and put it also in a broader context, specifically when it comes how media, Western media, not to say that other media doesn't do also other problematic things, but just in this case, and the way you see a powerful media in the West reacting and dealing with this genocide and maybe also other wars like invasion of Iraq, etc. Thank you.
Look, the question on why so many states prefer to violate rather than comply with international law, I think on the one hand, they fear no consequences because international law applies on the assumption of reciprocity. I respect the law knowing that others in good faith will respect it. But of course, the consequences depend, in case of wrongdoings, in case of violations, on the effectiveness of the system to react. And there have been moments in the past, again, speaking from South Africa, clearly many member states have protected apartheid South Africa, but gradually they have been pushed, they have been forced to take measures. They have been forced by the global solidarity, but also by member states within the General Assembly itself. I mean, the key members of the Security Council, United States and United Kingdoms, were key allies, and Israel outside the Security Council were key allies of apartheid South Africa. But what was stark back then was the how united the non-alignment movement was, the so-called Global South, the global majority. That has changed over time, and Israel has managed to establish its influence in many places in the global majority, in Africa, in Latin America. Then the second element is ideological. And in the global north, in the global minority, there is a significant ideological affinity, at least of those in position of power, with Israel. And in the, maybe it's because there is also anti-Muslim feelings, the Palestinians are seen somewhat as less deserving protection than the Israelis. I mean, this is a fact. And it's despicable, but we have to face reality. And then the other ideological element, it's something that is not sufficiently discussed in the global arena, but it's how pervasive is the spreading and the influence of Christian Zionism that is turning the so-called Global South into a less sensitive to the Palestinian question reality. And this is, I understand, through my exchanges with states and non-state actors, non-governmental organizations, groups of faith, in the global south, from Asia, Latin America, and Africa. This is an increasing problem, that it's not allowing people to see where the problem is. It's contributing to manipulate the information regarding Palestine, what happens to the Palestinians. And so ideology is there. Then there is different kinds of ideologies. Then there is profit. Many states are partnering with Israel and testing weapons and surveillance techniques at the expense of the Palestinians. And tragically, many member states, including those who do not have direct ties, diplomatic relations with Israel, one way or another, and indirectly, keep on buying these surveillance techniques, these weapons, that are becoming more and more nefarious. Whom are you going to use them against? drones and this the last generation devices that combine unconventional weapons and technology. It's very serious. But last but not least, I also think that there is a fundamental problem of lack of full sovereignty and independence of many countries. We tend to think in terms of state as decision makers, but many states do not have and do not exercise effective decision-making power because the main power stands and sits with multinationals operating in their countries. So we are still coping with a legacy of settler colonialism, of last century's settler colonialism, which has changed shape. There are no states, colonial states with boots on the ground. There are still businesses and others who profiteer from this situation. And Ibtissam, on the media, I don't know, because I don't want to pontificate, I don't want to elaborate further. I've done some investigations that have not culminated in a proper report. But of course, I agree that there has been, across mainstream media, although the situation has changed since the starvation and since the end of the breach of the ceasefire in March 2025, things have changed a little bit. But the language used, the lack of context when speaking of Palestine, the no balanced coverage between what happens to the Israelis versus the Palestinians is quite starking. So I keep on saying, as soon as I have the time, I would be happy to engage with exploring the role of the media, which deserves scrutiny and investigation. But I also have to keep pace with the Israeli violations of international law, which continue massively despite member states keep on celebrating peace and talking of ceasefire. There is no ceasefire in Gaza. People keep on dying, on being starved, and being forcibly displaced. As simple as that.
Final question on the line from Mike Wagenheim. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Albanese, for doing this briefing. Couple questions for you. Number one, you spoke of Christian Zionism a moment ago. There are two Christian groups in America who are suing you for defamation. I wanted to know if you have any comment on that lawsuit and why you're utilizing the South African government to run cover for you and try to duck that lawsuit. The second question, you had an interview in Vanity Fair earlier this year, the one where you admitted you didn't take the bar exam, and you asked the UN in that interview, you said you asked the UN to provide proof that you were not funded by Hamas in travel a couple years ago, weren't funded by Hamas supporting organizations. The UN hasn't produced that. Still, are you willing to produce that? Because I would imagine you would have those records.
Max, I challenge you and anyone, please. I mean, how can the UN prove something that has not happened? This is probably the 10th time that I repeat that. The trip to Australia was funded by the United Nations, and you can claim that the United Nations should not have paid for my trip to Australia or shouldn't pay for my trip to South Africa. And I can tell you, I would love to use the UN funds to go to the occupied Palestinian territory, and unfortunately, Israel doesn't allow me. So I challenge you, you provide evidence that Hamas has paid for me anything, even a meal, and I will stop being a special rapporteur tomorrow.
Why can't you show evidence?
Let's go to the second question. I hear there are Christian Zionists who, instead of stopping funding the Israeli crimes and covering for Israeli crimes, are trying to sue me. But I'm covered by privileges and immunities, and I think that this is what the South African government has done. I have no more information. Your government would be happy to answer any questions you have in this respect.
Can I have a follow-up, please?
We've actually got to go to the room now. We've got a couple of questions in the room in South Africa, if you want to go ahead.
Spoke about the difficulties of the international legal system to respond, and we've clearly seen them as well, the limitations of the international legal system to tackle this. Does this report now maybe open up avenues for national courts to be seized in the countries of the third countries? And could you perhaps elaborate on those avenues? Can you hear me?
Well, there is a bit of an echo, but repeat just this. National courts.
Maybe I'll do it with a. Oh, sorry.
No, you just speak slowly.
Legal system or the willingness of member states to abide by international law. Does your report now maybe provide more incentive or more avenues, legal avenues, for citizens to take up national courts against their own states for failing to meet their responsibilities? And if so, could you perhaps detail what those avenues could look like? Associations could take up, I don't know, the UK or Belgium or whatever, but nationally, for failing to meet those legal obligations that they had.
I'll answer this question. So, yes, I've said that in the member states have a series of obligations. Of course, they, as I often say, they have to cut trade. They have to cut the transfer of weapons. But they also have to investigate, prosecute, those who might be responsible for crimes or complicity with crimes. This includes, it could include state authorities. It is happening that member states there are states where there are cases, legal cases initiated against government officials for complicity with Israel's crimes. But member states also have an obligation to regulate and control the businesses registered in their own countries. And very little has been done, actually nothing as far as I know. So in this respect, yes, there are a number of legal cases that have been initiated in a number of states against Airbnb, for example, against booking.com, against, I know that there is another case against a tourism online platform, I don't know if it's public or not, against oil companies or arms manufacturers. But of course, there is also the very important series of cases that should start at the national level. Domestic court, I hope, because again, I've already mentioned what are the issues with the ICC right now. But there are national courts that are competent, surely, for their own nationals that have been fighting in the Israeli army. So any national, for example, South Africans or UK citizens or Italian citizens who have been fighting in the Israeli army should be considered suspects and therefore investigated. And if the collected evidence so warrants, prosecuted for alleged crimes they might be involved in. But also there is the case when Israelis who have no nationality connection with a state that can prosecute for international crimes, the mere presence could trigger an investigation. And for this, there is the Indra Jab and other lawyers' organizations who are trying. Look, it's going to be a long process, but eventually it will succeed. I hope that this is the test. We have not been able to prevent and punish genocide yet. We have not been able to prevent and stop genocide yet. But I do hope that the accountability will start filling the gap.
Hi, Francesca. Bob and Charles from News 24. I just have two questions. Since you've submitted your report, what has changed? And on a personal level, what would your ideal solution be for Gaza?
I don't know what has changed because my report was submitted only a few weeks ago and published only last week. So I wish there was already an effect. What I saw is that there are many member states who are clearly upset, and I'm happy they are upset. I'm not here to make them feel comfortable. Of course, I also see that the attack ad persona, ad hominem continue, and this is disgraceful because, again, I would like to see simply member states engaging with the facts instead of what they think of my persona or the way I execute my mandate. You know, I expect the states engage with the merits of the claims that I make against them. Israel and all states must be serious, must consider seriously the allegations that are made by me, the Commission of Inquiry, and other special rapporteurs, and the crimes that we allege they are implicated in. And this is not just because of what I say in my reports, but this is also for the seriousness of the matter that is being considered today by the International Court of Justice for Genocide and by the ICC. There are cases of war crimes against humanity already that have already translated into arrest warrants. And there are many more cases that, as I was mentioning, are brought before national courts. So this is really a moment of change. It's either justice or its opposite. It's a very, very serious moment. And I'm afraid member states are not grasping with the seriousness of the moment for their own interests. You know, I keep on quoting and referring to this that I share for the benefit of those who follow us online or from New York. But I was really struck by some handwritten lines by Nelson Mandela reflecting on his presidential years and saying, women and men have always come and gone through the centuries. Some do not leave a trace, others are remembered for their evils, and others for their attempt to bring justice through their own actions in this life. It's about for diplomats and civil servants to decide what kind of role they want to play in this very sad and tragic page of our history. Because we are living on a borrowed future, so they don't seem to realize that.
So, okay, we're going to hand it over to New York now, please.
Thank you. Just to say, from New York and online, we thank you very much, Ms. Albanese, for your time and for the briefing and for sharing your report with us. And that will close the briefing on our side. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thanks to all the journalists in the room and online. Bye.
Thank you.
See you next year in New York. Inshallah.